Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello and welcome back to this week's Classic Replay, picking up where we left off last week as we joined the second part of the Atheist Prayer Experiment. It was a results show from November 2012 when I was joined by Tim Mawson, the Oxford philosopher whose paper on praying to stop being an atheist inspired something we called the Atheist Prayer Experiment. We invited atheist listeners to the show to experiment praying to God to make himself known to them, to keep track of what happened. Loads of questions were raised. Many interesting reflections took part in part one, and now we're joining the conversation again. Again, this took place 10 years ago, but it was just a fascinating time, this concluding part of our review of this experiment. Just before we get into the show, a reminder that Unbelievable is no longer just this one show. It's the umbrella ministry, Premier Unbelievable, bringing you loads of great conversations, resources, podcasts, and videos. Check us out at premierunbelievable.com, where you can subscribe to our newsletter. Let's get into today's Classic Replay.
You're unbelievable.
Yes, this is the show that aims to get you thinking, and the way we've been trying to do that is by inviting atheists recently to pray to God to reveal himself to them. Pretty unusual experiment, and we talked last week about whether it even deserves to be given the name experiment, but certainly a lot of people did end up getting involved. Some 70 or so atheists signed up, some with varying degrees of success as to how long they lasted through the 40 days, but the vast majority did at least give it a good try for the majority of the time. And, well, the vast majority of results that have come back in, though we haven't had all the results in at this point that we're recording this show, the vast majority, though, have said, I didn't feel that God revealed himself to me in the course of the experiment. With the exception, as we mentioned last week, of Kendra, whose story we read out, who actually converted, funnily enough, to Christianity before the experiment began, having signed up for the experiment. We felt that deserved to be counted in the tick box, as it were, as we're not putting too firm a kind of parameters on exactly when and how this experiment begins. So we're coming back to this again, this time, Tim. Thank you for joining me. Tim Mawson, I should say, is the philosopher from Oxford upon whose paper this whole thing was based. And in a way, Tim, I suppose what we were trying to do is kind of put the philosophical idea of that your paper is supporting, that there's a, that philosophically speaking, there's an obligation for atheists who don't assign a completely zero possibility to God's existence, that they should pray as one of the ways of investigating whether he exists.
Yeah, that's right. If you can say to your first friends, as I keep saying, look, I've prayed to God and he's not revealed himself, that is you reporting a little bit of evidence you've collected that your atheism is well-grounded. Yeah.
So it seems to be in the interests, let's say, of atheists who are interested in the question to take part. And so some 70 atheists did take part. What's been interesting, of course, is that hardly anyone's really focused on that question per se during the course of doing the experiment. It's been all kinds of other questions that have come to the fore, and we're going to look at some of those in the course of today's programme, particularly around the area of what would count as evidence if I thought God had spoken to me. Coincidences were reported by some of the people taking part, but very often discounted as, well, they will inevitably just have a naturalistic cause, or maybe I'm over-interpreting events or whatever. Yeah. So we'll get to some of that. We've got some really interesting pieces coming up from people like Ali, and Bob and Charlie. We're going to hear from Rachel as well, who went under the pseudonym Paddy McGingersnap on the Facebook group that we established for the Atheist Prayer Experiment. She's got a fascinating story to tell about hearing a voice while praying. So we'll hear from her a little later on. But before we get to any of that, time to hear from Kelly. Now, Kelly got in touch, essentially sort of as an agnostic, I think, as regards the existence of God. So let's hear what her experience was when she came into doing the Atheist Prayer Experiment. Kelly, I just wanted to catch up with you because you were in the unusual position of being one of the people who responded to this challenge to pray to God for 40 days to reveal himself to you. But at the time you responded, you were actually heavily pregnant, weren't you?
Yes, very pregnant.
Tell us what happened after you had agreed to take on this particular challenge.
Well, when I saw the ad, I think it was probably a week before I actually started, before I actually gave birth. So I kind of started immediately when I saw the thing to do the, I don't know what to call it, but...
The Atheist Prayer started, Experiment, yeah, to kind of start praying.
Thank you. I started praying, and I actually went into labor early. It was on September 13th. I went into the doctor. They told me that we had to do it, had to induce labor that day because my fluid was low, so it was kind of scary. I went into labor. I went, they induced me, went all day long. Nothing happened. I ended up having to get a C-section. But everything was fine. She was completely healthy. And, about 2 days later, after we brought her home from the hospital, the night we brought her home, we had, it was me and my parents and, just a lot of family over here at the house. And I was inside with her, and I remember Brian, that's the father, was outside, and he called me to come outside, and I looked up in the sky, and across the entire sky was a full rainbow. I've seen rainbows before, but I've never seen anything like that before. It was across the entire sky. It was the biggest rainbow I've ever seen, and it was full rainbow, full color. And so I just kind of took that as a sign.
It's a really interesting story, Kelly, because funnily enough, you actually got what you considered your evidence, your sign that there is a God, before the experiment had officially begun, in fact, but you'd sort of started early, hadn't you? So though, we've had other people report interesting coincidences and things, even rainbows in kind of similar circumstances, and we'll hear about that. For them, though, they often said, oh, it's just a coincidence. But for you, it was enough for whatever reason.
Well, just because I've prayed for a long time, many times, and I guess the reason I wasn't really a believer is because I felt like I was praying all the time and getting nothing back. And I just said, well, okay, well, I'm going to do this and just to see, and do it by the book every single day and see. And it really, a few days later, it just seemed not like a coincidence. Maybe it was because I was really happy because I just had a baby and I was home or whatever, but it just seemed like it was like exact right timing to where I would notice, because I hadn't even been outside for 3 days. I'd been in a hospital room, so there was no way for me to see anything like that. I didn't even know that it was raining the day before.
From my perspective, I'm obviously very glad that you feel that this has happened and that this was a sign that there is a God. You haven't, though, at this point, taken any kind of steps towards a specific idea of God. I mean, you wouldn't at this point call yourself a Christian, for instance, would you?
No.
And, I suppose I'd be interested to know, do you feel like it's the start of more investigation, or is this...
to be honest with you, I've been a Christian before, and I've been a believer before, and I got to the point where I didn't believe anymore, and I really, my idea of God is different from a lot of people. I just really wanted to know that there was somebody out there that's listening, that, there's something behind everything, And I just kind of for a while was feeling like there was nothing, or at least nothing on my side. And I felt like that was at least somebody acknowledging what I was doing in my life, and it just felt right. So,
well, thank you very much for taking part, and well, congratulations as well. Tell us a little bit about the baby.
Yeah, boy,
She what's her name?
Her name is Palmer Fox.
And you're a first time mum yourself, aren't you, Kelly?
Yes.
Well, all the
I was not planning on having a child ever, so this is definitely different for me. But it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, so I'm excited.
Great stuff. Thanks so much for joining me, Kelly, and for sharing your
story.
And all the very best. And yes, I hope that praying in the future continues to bring good things along. Thank you very much for taking part.
Sure, thank you.
Well, what did you make of that, Tim? Obviously, Kelly, that was enough. The rainbow.
Yeah.
Your thoughts.
Interesting. Well, I think there were two sort of good principles to bear in mind. First, as a good regulative idea, that everyone is their own best judge over what a given experience is for them evidence of. And that isn't a universal truth, but it's a good regulative idea. You should assume that until you've got pretty strong evidence to the contrary. And then the second related one is that what evidence for one person, that same experience if had by another person, might not be evidence for them of a particular hypothesis being true, depending on their prior beliefs and the structures and history that's led them to that experience. So that then ought to make one sort of reluctant to dismiss anybody's story of an experience as not really the evidence they took it to be. But I can imagine, all that having been said then, that if I was an atheist listening to this, I would think that a rainbow falls short of a miracle by quite a long way. I mean, she said it was a rainbow across the entire sky, not like any that she'd seen before. But I took it that this was not her gesturing to it being a rainbow. It was physically impossible to have been produced by light refracting differentially through the atmosphere or whatever it is that causes rainbows. So I've interpreted her right, that this is a purely natural phenomenon that, however, just happened to sort of land up in her life at a time when, given her structures, she couldn't help but interpret it this way. I could imagine an atheist saying, well, if that had happened to me, I wouldn't interpret it that way. And I'd want to say of the atheist that that might well be the right way for you to interpret such a rainbow, i.e. the only reasonable way for you to interpret it from your starting point, without thinking that I'd thereby be compelled to say of Kelly that she was wrong to interpret it the way that she did.
Yes, and so at the end of the day, you know, one person may see something, another person see the same thing. They interpret it differently because they've got a different sort of backstory that's leading them up to that place.
Yeah.
For the one person who sees a mother manhandling their child, they may think, oh, she's doing something awful, treating that child roughly. The other person who knows that there's a car coming around the corner and that, that may then interpret that event as getting the child out of the way of the oncoming car or something. It's about your things you come to certain experiences with.
Yeah, that's right. And that, in that example illustrates, is that is possibly more common than we like to think. It would be nice, in a sense, if a given experience was always ipso facto, in its own right, evidence for hypothesis X of a particular degree of strength for everyone at all times in all places. But I just think that as a general truth about the way evidence works is not generally true. And given that it's not generally true, unfortunately, we cannot definitively say of Kelly that she was right to interpret it that way. Or she was wrong, or everyone should agree she was right, or everyone should agree she was wrong.
Well, one of those who has been taking part in the Atheist Prayer Experiment who stuck out, I think, the whole 40 days is Rachel, though she has gone under the pen name of Paddy McGingersnap, which is one of the more inventive names I've ever heard, Rachel. why Paddy McGingersnap exactly?
Oh, Paddy was, when I was nine, I wore a duffel coat and well-even ate marmalade sandwiches, so it was from Paddington. So I've had that a long time. McGingersnap was just something silly I put on when I was writing for a comedy website, so I don't know. No one told me that Facebook, you're meant to put your real name in so that people can actually find you. The reason why I have no friends, because no one knows who I am.
Well, anyway, you're known to pretty much everyone who's on the Facebook group as Paddy.
I am.
Regardless, Paddy or Rachel, you kind of were, I think, one of the most fascinating accounts to read during that time, because you really did wear your heart on your sleeve, it's fair to say, during the atheist prayer experiment. Give us a bit of the backstory, because you actually were a Christian at one point, weren't you?
I was. I've been blogging about my loss of faith, but never got round to the final chapter before today, alas. I was brought up initially in a sort of fairly staid Anglican church, and then my family got involved in a more sort of charismatic Christianity. We were very much involved with people like John Wimber when he was coming over in the 1980s. And that was very much my faith too. But I had the difficulty of being having a serious health condition, and I was diagnosed with chronic renal failure when I was 10, and also when I grew up I realised I was gay. So these were sort of two things that were a little bit difficult to reconcile with the kind of faith I grew up with. Eventually my faith sort of died away, and it was more to do with my illness than my sexuality, or the reasons I stopped being a Christian, and not the reasons why I'm now an atheist. So that's the background where I came from. But I thought it would be interesting to take part in the experiment, probably a sort of just challenge to myself, because I know it can raise a lot of fear, the thought that you might have to reassess a very fundamental facet of your worldview. But I thought, come on, be brave, do it. And I figured if I was going to do this properly, I did have to be honest about what I was experiencing and what I was feeling. So I tried to do that, and sometimes it was challenging, and you know, I've not shared absolutely everything, but the things that I thought I really ought to, I did. So,
fairly early on, you shared a story of praying, in which you said that you had a bad week, I think, and you do suffer from depression. Yes. And you asked in the prayer, as you prayed, you heard a voice. Just you'll tell it a lot better than I can. So tell us what happened.
Well, I was having tried various praying positions. I think it was only about day three or four. It wasn't that long into the experiment. I thought, well, I'll do the kneeling thing. So I did, and I just spent a bit of time, as I had done after asking God to reveal himself to me, just sort of thinking over what was happening in my life and trying to listen just to see if there was any answer coming back. And I was feeling sad. And then I just... And it's strange, because I've had this sort of voice in my head. I think it's probably similar to when I was a Christian. I heard something similar occasionally if I bothered to contemplate or actually spend any time seriously praying. But also in my sort of early 30s, when I had a sort of spiritual practice that wasn't associated with any kind of religion. But this voice that has occasionally come to me throughout my life just said, you know, do you want me to help you with your sadness? And I said, yes, that would be good. And the sort of thought just dropped into my head, well, be thankful. So it was just, you know, just start focusing on what's good.
Obviously, you were among the few, if you like, atheists who remained an atheist for the duration of the experiment, who did report at least something going on at the time they prayed, a voice specifically. So what interpretation did you give to that? I mean, I can imagine Christians being inclined to leap on that and say, there you go, there's your evidence.
Well, I think, I'm pretty sure, I wrote my feedback to you, I don't think God was revealed to me, but I suspect people who've read my blog and my comments think that he was, and I just haven't recognised him. And of course, that is a possibility. But I do tend to think it's part of me. It's pretty rare that something has come from that voice that hasn't already been seeded in me somewhere before. The gratitude thing is something that I've learned in the past. I mean, it's perfectly possible it was God or something outside of myself but my belief is that it was a part of me. But I sort of came to the conclusion that it didn't really matter to me who or what it was. It was helping me live my life more productively and happily. So I'm not going to worry about that too much.
Mm. So overall, did you feel that the taking part was beneficial in the end?
Absolutely. I suspect a lot of atheism, and I don't want to speak for anyone else, but certainly I have tended to be very much sort of intellectualizing person, not been very good at emotions, and this has kind of helped me open up and be a bit more able to embrace life and whatever is out there without trying to mentally categorize it or try to slot it into what I believe and just let things be what they are. And you know, if I don't know, well, I don't know, that's fine.
Sure, sure.
So it has been helpful, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got Tim here in the studio. Tim, hearing Rachel's story, any thoughts from you?
No, thank you for participating, Rachel. I'm glad you felt you got something out of it. It's certainly, as Justin says, very interesting in that you did hear a voice. So a lot of the atheists I think we've been hearing from have just reported sort of that they've had no experience at all, which I think is in itself actually in this context could be evidence for them that their atheism is well grounded. But you, as Justin said, had a voice, which I'm sure you're right, a lot of people listening to this will be thinking, well, that was God speaking to you. But in the end, after some reflection, you thought, no, the better hypothesis is that it's part of me, although in the end even that was overtaken by the thought that, well, it doesn't matter to me who is really, it's being helpful to me, so I'll sort of put it on hold. And that was interesting. I mean, why? Suppose someone said to you, "Well, I think that my hypothesis is that you were hearing God speak to you." What would be your sort of reason for saying, "No, you're wrong"? I mean, obviously, you know your own mind better than anyone else. But they sort of project into you this thesis. You know, no, you've mistaken who was speaking to you then, Rachel. What do you say?
Well, the reason I believe it's me is it's just the more parsimonious hypothesis.
Right, okay, yeah, sure.
So it's partly that, and also as soon as you say God exists, that throws up a whole load of other questions, so, which you're required to answer before you even get to, yes, it was God speaking to you. So whilst I'm prepared to admit that it's a possibility, I do find it more probable that it was a part of me.
Yeah.
But as I say, even if it wasn't a part of me, that still doesn't mean it was a God as a Christian might define him or it. So that was just my feeling. Generally, it's a more parsimonious explanation. I think it's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Yeah, so an argument from parsimony for atheism is sufficiently compelling to mean that which might otherwise, if you hadn't got that argument in the bag, be evidence for you that God was speaking to you, is in fact best interpreted overall in balance as evidence that there's a part of you speaking to you in this sort of vocal way.
Yes, as I say, I did get to the point where I thought, it doesn't really matter to me.
I mean, well, it seems entirely appropriate to bring in the voice now of Ali. Here's what Ali had to say about her experience on the Atheist Prayer Experiment. Well, joining me now is Ali. Did you find any value in sort of putting aside a few minutes a day to pray to God?
I did. I mean, I have to say, it did get a bit... I got a bit tired of it towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was just getting at a God that wasn't there. I'm like, why won't you talk to me? But I think I did get a lot out of it. It makes you think and assess what you believe and what, you know, everything means.
Did you hope to find God? Would that have been a good thing for you?
I wouldn't have thought it would be a bad thing. I didn't hope. I didn't expect.
You talked about having been struggling to pray. You hit upon the idea of, well, let's ditch the sort of the male God and try praying to a female version of God. And that helped, you said. To talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, it just seemed to... I'm trying to make sense of how, you know, people think that this world was created by a God. And I find that I really have a problem believing that. But I thought it made more sense if it was a female God, because all we get is the Bible telling us that it was made by this male God playing around with stuff. And I thought it made more sense if the earth was born and it's the mother that gives birth.
I'm tempted to go into a sort of debate on all those things you just said, but I'm going to leave it because we don't have the time to get into that. But okay. that was really interesting. The other thing you mentioned more towards the end of the experiment is you found it really difficult to pray in church. I think you'd gone along to a wedding or something, and you didn't find that helpful thing.
No, because that's a particular God. Well, I don't believe in the Christian version, and he just kept talking. He kept saying, "Let us pray now. You have to pray now, and this is the sign of the cross, and you have to take this with you all the time." And I don't know what's out there, so I don't want to pray to a particular God in case it's the wrong one.
If God did get in touch and say, "Well, I do have a character, and it is like this. I am the God of Christianity," or whatever.
Yeah.
Would that have been a big disappointment then at that point to you? That
I would just have to accept it. I don't know if it would be, and maybe it would be a disappointment. I don't know. But if he said, "Oh yeah, the Bible is true," then yeah, I think I would be quite disappointed.
Well, I suppose it depends on what you've taken away from the Bible at the end of the day. Jesus
seemed like an all right dude. But
well, according to the Bible, Jesus is the perfect representation of God. So maybe that's something. Anyway, I said I wouldn't go down
that
road.
Yeah, he seemed all right.
The Sunday, I think, following that, you saw this thing. Describe to us what it was and what kind of made you stop and look.
Okay, well, there was the sun was shining in the sky, but it had been a bit cloudy as well. So there were clouds. The sun was shining through a thin cloud, and it made a rainbow in the sky above it, not touching the horizon, just in the sky. And on either side of that sun was reflecting in the clouds, so it looked like three suns in the sky, and it made me think of the Trinity, and I wondered if that was the sign.
Christians, I suppose, might be inclined to say, "Hey, you were looking for a sign, there's your sign." Why doesn't that count for you, Ali?
Well, I don't know. It's certainly the most convincing thing that happened throughout the whole experiment. If something, you know, I think I was looking, if something is all powerful and omniscient, then God could do something that's completely impossible by our laws, because that would be a lot more convincing rather than just using what's already here.
There you go. Just some thoughts from my conversation with Ali. I just found it interesting there, Tim, that Ali saw essentially something possibly even better as a sign than Kelly did earlier on. But no, it needs to be something that goes beyond the laws of nature.
So I also found that interesting, especially that's why I think about the previous story where a rainbow which was described as a full rainbow such as had never been seen before. So, okay, maybe it's some sort of unique type of rainbow, but not the sort of three suns effect, which, as you say, is in a sense even better, even more spectacular. I suppose I tend to think that it is the case that were one to witness something for which one reasonably supposed there could be no natural explanation, then from that moment on, the inference to there being a God is a quicker one.
Are we sort of, asking God to jump through hoops that God doesn't feel he particularly has to when we say, you know, give me a sign that's more than this?
I mean, if that is what one is saying, then one does look as if one's in danger of asking God to jump through hoops of one's own creation rather than allowing him to do what in his omniscience seems to him best.
You're listening to Unbelievable. It's Saturday afternoon, the second of two shows where we've been looking back at the atheist prayer experiment. We'll be back in a moment's time. Well, another person who was a very devoted sort of blogger during the course of the atheist prayer experiment was Bob Seidensticker. So let's hear from him now and why he didn't feel that in the end, despite his prayers, that God had any communication with him. You're a pretty thoroughgoing atheist because you do lots of blogs and debates with theists of various kinds on the blog. At some level, people might expect that this experiment is a bit of a flaky thing to get involved with. What was your reason for getting involved in this?
Well, I've interacted with lots of Christians, as you mentioned, and one thing that I have been confronted with several times is someone saying, you know, you really just haven't given this a try. You know, have you simply asked God to make himself available to you, to make himself present? And I think that just to sort of cover my bases, this has been helpful for me.
Just after the experiment finished, you were on vacation, and there was a curious coincidence. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm vacationing here in Hawaii, and the very day after the experiment, there was an earthquake in British Columbia, caused a tsunami alert here in Maui. So we had to evacuate and move up to higher ground. And it turned out that it was not a big deal, but some, of course, might you know, call that not a coincidence, but the hand of God, and in fact say that God's hand stilled the waves.
But you just say these things happen.
Exactly right, yeah, and you know, several things actually, you know, part of the experiment was to notice things like this, and several things have happened, like, you know, of that nature.
Early on, you lost a wristband, didn't you?
That's right. I had a Good Without God wristband that someone had given me several years ago, and I've just worn it without, it's not, you know, a huge personal statement, but I've been wearing it for several years. I was working on a project, United Way, here in the U.S., and it turned out at the end of the day, the wristband was gone. And, you know, from my standpoint, I think, well, you know, I was wearing work gloves. I took it off, took off the work gloves, and it pulled off the wristband. Now, of course, you know, a Christian might say, well, that's God's hand again. That's, you know, you had a Good Without God wristband. You can't be good without God. That would be, you know, one interpretation.
You talked later on another blog about when you were in a car praying, doing your prayer. You did feel a benefit, even if you wouldn't necessarily ascribe it to God. Just describe that.
That's true. That's true. I have to admit that I did find myself feeling calmer. I don't know if it was imagining someone, you know, looking at me, sort of, you know, critiquing what I'm doing, but just praying as I was driving, trying to, you know, do both at the same time carefully. I felt myself being more considerate, feeling a little bit more loving, stopping early at traffic lights. You know.
But it's a benefit that you feel you should be able to access, perhaps without believing in, obviously, a supernatural entity at the other end of the line.
That's right. I would ascribe that to natural causes. Finding the supernatural cause behind things, that's going to take, you know, quite a bit of evidence, and I simply haven't seen that.
What is the criteria for deciding when something is or isn't a sign, a nudge from God?
My thought is that if I see something just by myself, if I get a vision, if God or Jesus appears to me just like, you know, you might, that would be pretty compelling, but a skeptical Christian, you know, wondering how open-minded I am, might say, well, you know, maybe that's an alien. You know, an alien, you know, even 1,000 years more advanced than our civilization might well easily be able to do that. You know, this is some sort of Star Trek kind of thing. And, you know, that's a good point. I think what I would want to see, not just me having my own vision, but everybody having the same vision. So we all have the same dream. Everybody in the entire world tonight has the exact same dream where Jesus comes and says, you know, here's the deal, here's who I am, and so on. And we're all talking about the next day. That is the kind of thing that I would like to see.
Could we not simply be skeptical about that? You know, alien technology, thousands of years in the future, they could,
it could be,
install,
it could be,
you know, the right technology to make us all have a dream. They could rearrange the stars to spell Yahweh. They could be playing a great big cosmic trick on us.
It could be. And then, of course, you could say, well, maybe if we're going to go in that direction, aliens created our universe. So in that case, maybe aliens are God. I mean, you can get into all sorts of you know, odd sci-fi kind of things.
There is this argument out there that God remains hidden to some extent because he's not necessarily just interested in people believing in him in a kind of forced way, that he leaves enough room in the evidence for people to not believe because he doesn't want people to believe just on the basis of a logical argument. He wants people to believe in him because they love him, because they want him, they desire him.
Yeah, I'm not really buying that. I mean, God making himself available, making himself present, letting me know that he exists, that's the minimum I expect. It's just what I demand. I need to see that existence. When you talk about God doesn't want to make us love him, okay, great. Well, show me that you exist first.
There you go. So that was Bob Seidensticker, and he's a blogger on the Patheos website. Cross-Examined is his blog if you want to check him out. But just some quick reactions to all of that, Tim. Yeah. Lot of stuff there.
Interesting series of cases there.
Do you feel that you have to limit your scepticism at some level if you're just going to get off the ground at all with the possibility of God?
I suppose one would have to look at the time traveling aliens hypothesis, but if it always on the right articulation comes out for you from your prior probabilities as more likely than the God hypothesis, and it's explanatory adequate to explain any phenomenon that could even in principle impinge on your psychology, then from those starting points it could never be reasonable for you to believe that God exists, whatever God did. And that then does strike me as reason to suppose that your starting points are overly sceptical with regard to theism.
Well, let's talk about the other aspect of what you said, and this was picked up certainly by many others who took part, not least Paddy, who we've got on the line with us. But, you know, he said, it did make me, when I did pray, I could see a beneficial effect. I was a kinder driver, more considerate, etc. Here's what Jill said. Again, she wasn't someone who came away feeling that she had heard from God, but she did say, it did remind me of the value of taking a few minutes a day to calm my mind and expand my perspective. Prayer is not the only way of doing that, of course, but it is effective. Whether you call it prayer, meditation, communing with the universe or what have you, I think it's probably beneficial for humans, regardless of their worldview, to seek stillness periodically. And Mark, another person who took part, says, I admire the discipline required to maintain a daily devotional time. I failed at that miserably by responding to everything else that's going on in my life. So I bow in respect to those who can consistently maintain a prayer schedule. Maybe I failed the experiment, but I certainly see value in having that quiet time and in reorienting oneself to the centre of one's being. And for the Christian, that would involve focusing on Jesus and experiencing his presence. But I just draw a big blank whenever I try and experience the same. Says Mark, another person who didn't at the end of the day feel that he had as he admits, his actual taking on the challenge was patchy, but he said what he did try to do didn't come out with something. I suppose Paddy, that from your perspective, you've said you certainly did feel there was value to getting involved. Has it in any sense moved you anyway along the spectrum that is there of firm atheist, at the other end ardent believer, in the middle is agnostic? Did you move anywhere between atheist and agnostic at all?
I think I may have moved slightly towards it's not so much agnosticism as the fact that I think I'm more open to the possibility than I was before. I don't know how far I've moved. But as I think I've mentioned on the Facebook page, I've kind of moved towards Buddhism, if anything. And because as well as the sort of contemplative communing with myself, stroke God, depending on what you think that voice is, I've also taken up insight meditation, which I have been doing every day since the experiment ended. And finding that valuable, just in the sense of, like others have said, having a few minutes or however long it is, just to ground yourself and prepare for the day, or if it's in the middle of the day, whatever, just to ground yourself back in reality. I don't know how far I've moved towards theism, but I think I'm a lot less defensive as an atheist.
That's interesting to hear. I suppose from my perspective, I can see just in the range of reactions I've had back to people, some of whom said, even though they didn't believe God was speaking to them, it was still a great, valuable experience. Others who said, I didn't hear from God, and it was a totally pointless experience. That prayer, in and of itself, will be valued differently by different types of people. And it strikes me almost, I don't know if you had anything to say to this, Tim, that prayer is by no means a kind of a one-size-fits-all thing for Christians either. Different Christians will experience what they get out of prayer quite differently from each other.
Indeed, and in this context one might think, well, part of the rationale for this was suggesting to the atheist that, as Bob mentioned, to cover your bases, perhaps you should engage in the sort of prayer which is asking any god who there might be out there to reveal himself or herself or itself to you in whatever way he or it sees fit, and that's supporting you if you get no result in the rational defensibility of your atheism. You're covering your bases that way. Now, that type of prayer, then, which is presumably not one that any Christian ever engages in, because they don't start from the presumption that there is no God and that they're asking for evidence of his existence. So it's it will strike, I think, many Christians listening to this as a rather odd type of prayer, possibly one that they've never engaged in if they were converted to Christianity at a late stage. Perhaps it is the prayer that, as a result of which more or less they converted, but if they've been brought up Christians all their life, they may never have uttered a prayer of the sort that we've been focusing on, encouraging atheists to engage in and encouraging them to come back with their results, and we've been talking about.
Well, let's just hear from a couple of others who emailed me in their thoughts. Time to turn, I think, to another issue that came up a number of times in the course of the experiment. The issue of suffering, which kind of comes up any time you kind of start to engage skeptics on the issue of God anyway. Here's Emma, who was taking part, again, someone who didn't come away with a tick in the God box at the end of the experiment. But she said it was very intellectually stimulating to take part, the discussions on the Facebook group and the unbelievable shows she's started to listen to. But at the end of the day, here she says, if I was forced to accept that the universe was created by and run by someone who loves us, but who can stand back and watch the unspeakable things we sometimes do to each other, or that the planet does to us, and be deeply sorry but unable to intervene, would that make sense, she asks, or unwilling? I know the argument. Where does God draw the line? Does he help only those who are prayed for, or those with minor ailments, or those with major problems? There's no logical way, says Emma, of explaining an occasionally interventionist God, and a non-interventionist one wouldn't reply anyway. So she questions the whole basis of, you know, prayer in the first place. Derek, this was his major issue, and I think you had a little bit of email conversation with Derek before he decided to, throw his hat into the ring and join the atheist prayer experiment. But he didn't get any revelation from God. He says it was valuable, and at least it helped him to clarify his thoughts. And he says, I've used this 40-day period not only to pray speculatively, as was the core premise of the project, but to intensively look into how Christians deal with suffering in the world. This, for me, is the biggest issue that stops me being able to contemplate that there might be a good God. I've read, thought, and discussed this. I joined an online Christian forum, put all my questions out there. Not only have I been asking God to talk to me directly, I've given him great opportunity to speak through others. I feel I've gone the extra mile. Not only have I called into the darkened room, but I've gone in and poked around with a stick. So he says that the hiddenness, if that's what it is, seems bizarre and needs a really good explanation. But at the end of the day, it's the suffering issue that kind of is the most compelling thing that stops Derek from even at the outset. He wasn't willing to join the experiment because of the whole concept of God wasn't making sense because of this suffering issue. Do you feel that some people have a good enough reason then not to pray to God on that basis, Tim, because they say, well, until I feel like God makes sense because of this problem I've got, in this case suffering, I'm not obliged to pray to God.
It's a good question. I think there is, for sure, in the background of this, there's a problem of the problem of divine hiddenness, it's usually called. If there is, as classical theists believe, an omnipotent, omniscient, perfectly good God who wishes to get into this type of relationship with his creatures who are capable of reciprocating to the extent that we are, why is it not immediately obvious to all of us at all times and all moments that he exists? The most plausible form of theism will need to have some answer to that. Why is it that God, at least in this life, starts us from some epistemic distance, permits some degree of agnosticism, even atheism? What greater good is this serving in the great divine economy? And if you think that this problem and the potential theistic solutions to it, problem is so severe, the theistic solutions to it are so inadequate, that in fact the probability that there is a God shrinks to you to zero, it's as probable as that there's a square circle, then I think it is, from that moment on, not coherent for you to pray to this thing that you've already decided has a zero probability of existing, because you find it to be insuperable. But most philosophers who have reflected on the problem of divine hiddenness, if they've admitted, as I think they ought to, that it's a variant of the problem of evil, have concluded that it's best construed as an evidential problem. So it doesn't reduce the probability of the existence of God to zero on the evidence, but just reduces it if they, to a greater or less extent, depending on how severe they think the problem is. And I think that as long as you're the atheist who thinks, look, I think there is no solution to this problem of suffering, but I guess that I'm not so absolutely convinced that I'm right in this scepticism about their solutions, I could still, from that moment on, give it a go. Does that make some sense?
It does, yes. That it's a question of how great a barrier this is, essentially, at the end of the day. And I'd like to return to this question of the hiddenness of God, but we sort of talked about it a bit in the last episode as well. But I know this kind of does tie in at some level to your story as well, Paddy, because you talked at the start there that medical problems that you had were part of the reason you left the Christian faith. Was that a barrier to then coming into this experiment and sort of testing again the waters, if you like?
Well, no. I think my faith sort of died before I noticed it and kicked the corpse out. If to use a rather unpleasant metaphor.
Well, it was an interesting one, yes.
And it was. I just suddenly sort of realised that all these people had been praying for me for years for my kidneys to be healed, and they hadn't. And that didn't sort of make me think, well, if this God exists at all, what kind of God is it? I mean, that was the initial thing that made me wake up and realize that actually my faith had become nothing more than an insurance policy, and that really wasn't a good enough basis for my life. I do find the problem of evil and suffering difficult to fit into a Christian viewpoint without a lot of angels dancing on pinheads. That is an issue for me. I mean, I am prepared to be sceptical of my own scepticism about it, but no, I do find it very difficult. And the hiddenness issue. I think the hiddenness issue wouldn't be such a problem for me if it weren't for hell. Saying, you know, if you really, really love someone and you know that if they don't know who you are and they don't have the right response to you, you're actually going to chuck them in a lake of fire for eternity. You think you'd make a bit more of an effort to make sure they know you're there in the first place. Is my sort of immediate thought.
I mean, there was some discussion about this, and obviously, you know, Christians will differ on their interpretation of hell. I personally know very few who believe in a sort of literal fire of hell, and many who would be more inclined to suggest it's a separation from God of some kind, and even possibly self-imposed on upon those who don't want God. Brings us back to that whole question of desire and motivation and all the rest of it, I suppose. But, we're not going to put the world to rights in one program, Paddy, but I'd just like to say thank you for joining in and for the honesty and vulnerability you've shown in your post. And I think it really added a great dimension to the whole experiment. And I am very happy that it's been overall a positive experience for you.
It has, absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you both.
Thank you for joining us today, Paddy. Paddy McGingersnapple, to give her proper name, Rachel, telling us a little bit about her experience as an atheist taking part in the atheist prayer experiment. Let's hear from someone else who took part. And this is Charlie's story. He went under the name during the experiment of the main skeptic. He's a long-time listener of Unbelievable. In fact, he's come on as a sceptical voice on a programme or two in the past. But he decided to take the plunge. But it turned out to be one of the most extraordinary months of his life, not in a good way. Let's hear what Charlie had to say.
I think if I had known everything that was going to happen, I probably wouldn't have taken part, if only because I don't like being a downer. I'm a fairly upbeat person normally. I knew when I signed up for the experiment that my father was probably going to die before it was over. As it happened, he died before it started. I had thought about it, and I thought, you know, that's, you know, I was a little concerned initially, mostly from the perspective of I knew I was emotionally vulnerable, so to spend time thinking about what it would be like if there was an afterlife and if there were a loving God. I worried about there being a false positive, but I decided, you know what, I am trying to be open-minded, so we'll go ahead and do this. And I signed up, and you signed me up for it. But then, then these other things started happening, and it had nothing to do, and I never for a minute thought it did. I don't think anyone did. But I belong to a council. These are friends of mine. We get together two or three times a year to conduct business, and within the context of that council, one of us had lost a partner shortly before my father died, and then two other people lost their fathers. So that
space of a few weeks, essentially.
Exactly. And then I also lost a pet the week after my father died, which, none of these were as traumatic as losing Dad, obviously, but, I felt for my friends. Their lives were changed forever. And then it was ironic to find myself putting down a pet, a week to the hour after my father had died.
And at the same time, very unusually, in that month that you were praying, for every time you turned around, it seemed you were talking to someone about their loss.
Exactly. And it's, I don't talk about death often. I don't think most people do. And really, I probably would not have brought it up in the context of the atheist experiment, except that, it seems like there's two or three ways that people seem to look for a communication from the supernatural, a miracle, the still small voice that Christians report as far as revelation goes, and then the coincidences. And so when coincidences started coming up, within the context of the prayer experiment, and people were saying, odd things happened. I've had a couple of interesting, neat coincidences. I thought, gosh, should I keep this to myself or say something?
Mm. Putting myself in the position, say, of a Christian who wanted to find some significance in these events, perhaps was inclined to see some significance, they might not put it in the terms you described there of, why would God kill people, innocent people, in order to get through to me? But they might say, well, look, in circumstances which are tragic, God can still speak. God perhaps wants to reach us, not just through good things, but even through bad things. Many people would report that was their experience, that it was the loss of a loved one that threw them into the arms of God, having not really considered that an option before.
I guess I'm not a stranger to that concept, but it that isn't the way it worked for me. I would have loved, especially with everything that was going on, I've seldom in my life had a time when I would have been so happy to have found out that there was an afterlife and a loving God. I'm aware that there will be Christians who will say, well, he's tone deaf, there's sin, there's something that keeps him from hearing. I can't change that, but I didn't hear anything.
The way another person put it to me, I just feel like if God wants me to know that God's there, they will make me believe. I will believe. If God's got the power, then God will give you the belief.
I would agree with that, and there was a story that I heard about my father in the days before he died. He was a believer and I'm not. It wasn't something that we would have talked about together. I had asked someone who was a Christian, how is he with this? Is it something that he's been worried about? I want him to be at peace with whatever with whatever he does believe. And what I heard was, what this person told me was, all he would say was that, look, if it was something that he thought he had to do himself, he would be worried. But it's up to God.
Right. Mm.
And I guess, in a sense, even across the atheist Christian divide, I agree with that.
Sure. So some people have reported that there was still some benefit in taking time out to stop, meditate, as it were. Was any of that the case for yourself?
I don't know what caused what. I don't know that I had a greater sense of peace after having prayed, but I will say that the conversations that took place on the Facebook page, maybe in combination with, having put my mind in that place and being surrounded by believers at my father's funeral, I really came away with I've always believed this, but a really stronger sense that people are people, And there's a tendency to, I have a tendency to want to divide people up and categorize them. I think all people do. But really, everybody grieves the same way, and everybody has the same desires for significance and a sense of belonging. And I think that really came through in the Christians Who Shared. It comes through, I think, on your show. That was a takeaway that I think I had.
There you go. Very honest account from Charlie there, main skeptic, as he was under the pseudonym on the Facebook group. We're going to take a break, and then we'll talk about Charlie's story and about this whole area of whether God can speak through suffering and whether we should count that as some kind of indication of his presence. But you're listening to Unbelievable, and I hope you'll join us for the final part of today's show. It's the final look at the atheist prayer experiment. My guest in the studio is Tim Mawson, and we'll be back in just a moment's time.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Tim is the philosophy academic at Oxford, for want of
the
better, not the only, but an academic,
yes,
at Oxford, who wrote the paper that we've sort of based the atheist prayer experiment on in the last month or two. We'll maybe get a chance to talk in more philosophical terms about the paper, but it's been fascinating how many other questions essentially have been raised in the course of people practically going out there, well, staying in most cases, and doing this experiment, praying for a few minutes each day, even as an atheist, for God to reveal himself to them. As we've mentioned from the outset of both these shows, the results haven't all come in, but the overwhelming majority have said no difference. But there have been a few exceptions to that. Obviously, Kelly, who we heard at the top of today's programme, and indeed Kendra last week. And I'm going to bring another email shortly from someone called M, who didn't quite fit into either of the yes or no categories as far as I was concerned, so we'll hear what she has to say. Just going back to what we heard at the end of that last section there, and I really appreciate Charlie, again, being someone who was prepared to wear his heart on his sleeve and talk about these tragic circumstances he's experienced and his friends have experienced during the time that he was praying in the atheist prayer experiment. I suppose I challenged Charlie a little to ask, well, could it be that God could use even circumstances like that, negative ones, to as a way of indicating something, a need for him, whatever? Perhaps that's all rather too subtle, and most of our atheists do seem to want something pretty wham-bam, miracle sort of stuff for proof. But I mean, anything to add to that yourself, Tim?
Well, I mean, no, it was obviously a terrible time for Charlie, and my heart goes out to him. But I would think that in response to the question, can God speak to us through suffering, the answer from a Christian perspective is certainly yes. But I don't think the Christian is committed to thinking of all instances of suffering as ones that God is using to speak to people. There can be pointless suffering that the world will be a lot better place without, and that God is willing us to do something to remove. And one would have to sort of talk to Charlie at greater length, as you did, in greater length than that, to be sure how to understand his particular story from a Christian point of view. But it does sound like, to be frank, a difficult one for a Christian to understand, because he was a sincere person who said at one stage very movingly that this was a period in his life when, if only he could have become convinced that there was an afterlife and a loving God with the death of his father, this would have been the moment, if you like, at which God should have spoken to him. And prima facie, that seemed very convincing to me, and hence, if I do allow myself a slightly sort of dispassionate philosopher's look at his story, I would say, well, then he was one of these people who was gaining quite good evidence that God didn't exist, because if there is a God of the sort that I, speaking now as a Christian, do happen to believe in, that's just the sort of person who God would be motivated to speak to in those circumstances. So I found his story personally troubling, although indeed as a philosopher, if you allow me this dispassionate hat, good meat for the argument.
It's just so interesting, isn't it, though, that for some people that will be the thing that propels them towards a belief in God. For others, it simply remains a neutral point.
Can even drive them away.
The way that Charlie put it, he didn't sort of say it kind of turned him off or anything like that. But what he said was, well, 70 people taking part, someone statistically was likely to have a bad month, and my number came up. I suppose that's the way you have to see the world if you are committed to a kind of naturalistic viewpoint. We live in a world of...
Yes, and all I'd want to add to that is that you don't have to see all instances of suffering as not numbers coming up if you're a Christian. You can say sometimes God uses suffering, but sometimes it is just someone's unlucky number comes up.
Well, let's talk as well about... Let's that email I mentioned from M. I thought this was quite interesting. Someone else who took part in the, I got this kind of at the last minute actually, as I was just putting together the final set of results that had come in, and M emailed and said, sorry for the late reply. Unfortunately, the experiment followed the same pattern as my belief. So she's not registering, as it were, a positive outcome that she heard from God. But what she does say is, there are several reasons why I think it would be spiritually more beneficial for me to believe, and I'm trying to find a way to achieve that. However, something holds me back, not in a way that I don't want it, but in committing to continue on a road that might achieve it. I accept that by definition, I cannot imagine believing. If I could, I'd be there then. But by the same token, it's stopping me committing myself to a method, so to speak, to find my faith. I'm continuing to attend bi-weekly Bible classes, where at the moment we're discussing where our desires come from and can they ever be fully satisfied on this earth, and if not, then can they come from something of earth, or must it come from someone equally infinite as our deepest common desires? Unfortunately, faith cannot easily be reached by reasoning, but I'm continuing on that road nevertheless. I partly understand and partly don't why I'm unable to fully commit, but I do try to start afresh every now and then, and hoping that by loving more, I will eventually be shown the way. Sorry for the long and not much of an answer, but I suppose that is the feedback I can provide. So Em sort of talks of herself as somehow on a journey. She's obviously looking for faith. She obviously sees that there are benefits to be had, but she's sort of stuck at an impasse of some kind. So I wasn't quite sure where to categorise that, but I thought worth reading that one out as a sort of someone who took part, but is still obviously wondering exactly where the dice will fall as to her response to it. Perhaps not much to add to that, but just to let it stand as someone's reflection on the experiment. We did have some people, though, at the outset of this, who got in touch and, from a Christian perspective, weren't entirely comfortable with the whole premise of the atheist prayer experiment, Tim. They said, is it not equivalent to sort of testing God? And one can understand that point of view.
Sure,
Do not put the Lord thy God to the test. Any response to that?
Yeah, indeed. No, so as a Christian, one has it on good authority that one should not put the Lord thy God to the test. And yet the same authority assures us that if you knock, the door will be open to you. If you seek it, you shall find. So I'd say that the obligation, if it is an obligation at all, to conduct this experiment, isn't falling on those people who would find God to be the Lord thy God. So it's true of everyone who is already a Christian that this type of prayer is not appropriate to them. But if you're not in the position yet, so speaking from a Christian point of view, if you're not in the position yet of having a Lord thy God in your life, then of course you're not putting the Lord thy God to the test by engaging in it. So I think it just bypasses the cogency of the first comment. The second comment comes in. And
at the end of the day, surely we must acknowledge that many people do seem to have a testimony of doing something along these lines, having come to the end of whatever resources they had, asking God, well, if you're there, show me, and then saying that, well, God did show me. They don't call it testing God, they call it calling upon God.
Yeah, that's a good point. That would be a nice rhetorical one for me to make if any of these Christians put it to me and said, how, as a Christian, could you say this? Is it not putting the Lord thy God to the test? I'd say, well, do you say, whenever anyone comes to the front and gives their testimony about how they were in a desperate place until they called on God and then Jesus entered their life, sinner, you have put the Lord thy God to the test at the moment you did your prayer of commitment. No, they say quite the contrary. So,
and I suppose I would say, and this is purely from a Christian perspective. I'm not asking the atheists who are listening to make this appeal. But if you are wondering whether there was any spiritual benefit, well, obviously for Kendra, there's been enormous spiritual benefit, and who knows where Kelly's journey may take her. But That kind of wasn't the focus of doing this. We weren't doing this as a sort of let's try to convert as many people as possible.
Indeed. And so I would say to the atheist that Bob summed it up rather well, to cover my bases. I think that as an atheist, if you've conducted this experiment informally or in your own life prior to even hearing about this, you've done something equivalent, you will be able to say to your theist chums in argument, well, one of the reasons I have for being an atheist is that I've tried sincerely to communicate with God and heard nothing by way of reply. And that is sort of an arrow in your quiver.
Yeah. Well, it's been a fascinating process doing this. Going back to what we said right at the start of the first show, we called it the Atheist Prayer Experiment. It's not an experiment, per se, because I think you had a rather nice analogy you mentioned off air just a minute ago. What did this amount to?
I think it's not an experiment in the way that you could test whether a lever is connected to a certain cog by pulling it, and if it were connected to the cog, a certain result would inevitably be generated. Because if there is a God out there listening to one's prayers, as a Christian I believe that there is, as an atheist you're supposing that there isn't, he would be, or is, someone who has free choice, who is omniscient, who can choose whether or not to reply, how to reply if he replies at all. And that makes the experimental method, as if we want to call it that at all in such context, one that can't yield conclusive results one way or the other.
In scientific terms, there's an unknown variable in your experiment, which is essentially God.
Yeah.
It's a sort of...
And experiments, well, if one could consider the Latin roots of that, experia, to try, to test, and in a sense one is testing, but in that the results of one's test aren't determined by purely mechanical processes, but in part by whether a person at the other end of it chooses to reply, then you might say, well, I don't want to use the word experiment of those type of activities. In that case, okay.
Well, it's been fascinating to spend some time with you, Tim, looking at the results of the Atheist Prayer Experiment. I hope that in some way it is an aid to your academic interest in the subject, that it provides some...
Well, I've certainly found it very interesting to hear all these differing points of view, different perspectives, different stories that people have told.
And, well, if you want to actually read the paper that this was all based on, have made it well, Tim can send it to you essentially. He's agreed to do that, and so if you want a copy, well, go to the Atheist Prayer Experiment page where we'll keep Tim's email address, and he'll be happy to furnish you with a copy if you're so interested.
Certainly.
But thanks again for coming on, Tim.
No, thank you for having me.
Be great to have you with us. So concludes the Atheist Prayer Experiment. And just again, a huge thank you to everyone who took part, whatever the outcome was for you. I really appreciate everyone who essentially had the guts to step forward and give it a go. And it's certainly put me in touch with a whole new set of people that I didn't know some 40 days ago. And that can't be a bad thing. Thank you very much again for taking part if you're one of the participants. And thank you for those who have been looking on and commenting as well. Well, I hope you enjoyed these two shows looking back at the Atheist Prayer Experiment that took place 10 years ago. It was a really interesting time. I remember it well, and I've written about it in my first book, Unbelievable, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists I'm Still a Christian. But love to know your thoughts 10 years on. Hey, maybe you were one of the people who took part and you're still listening to Unbelievable. Tell us what it's like 10 years on from having done that. Would you like to see it happen again as well? Perhaps, you know, there's some spare funding out there for a new research project. You just don't know what to spend it on. Do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Anyway, links to our newsletter, YouTube channel, ways to give, archive of past shows, and much more besides as ever at our website, premierunbelievable.com. And if you do want to join, drop me a line. Just email me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Another classic replay coming for you same time next week, and you can get our regular show every Friday, every weekend from Unbelievable too. For now, thanks for being with us. See you next time.